Well, this talk's kind of a little story, and it's a picture story, as you can see. Did people get a chance to look at it more closely, or shall I? I can just use my high-tech pointer. Over here we have, which hopefully you can tell, yesterday I was told it looked like a field of cows, but I worked on it. This is a little town here, and I don't know if you can see it, but there's a little path that snakes along up here and ends up here, and here's a little figure, and we have pools of water and a canyon land filled with golden mist. So many years ago, when I was a novice, I was struggling with something, kind of half aware that I was struggling with it. I mean, I knew I was, but in a way only half aware. And I was having difficulty with a particular person that I couldn't seem to resolve. And this is not an uncommon occurrence, especially in the monastery where you're always bumping up against one another. And it's wonderful training, and but I'd hit a kind of an impasse that I couldn't seem to get beyond. And I wasn't really conscious that I was really asking for help, but I must have been, because one day when I was meditating, I just had this image come up. And I'm a kind of visually oriented person, so often things come to me that way because I understand that. And the way it was explained to me in meditation was that, you know, I'd started out here, and in the course of my path of training so far, I'd come up this lovely path here through these lovely green hills, and that was kind of nice, and training was nice, you know, it had its moments of difficulty. You know, you can see it's an uphill climb there, but not too bad. And but that I found myself here at the at that present time. And that what I was doing is I'd come to a point where there was only two ways to go, basically. I could either go back the way I came, or I could jump off this cliff. And so what I was doing, this is what I was instructed in my meditation, was that what I was doing was running back and forth. You can see, hopefully you can see, there's a little path worn along the edge of the cliff in both directions. And that what I'd been doing for some time is just going back and forth, looking for any way around my options, which were, it was becoming quite clear, were just those two things. You either go back or you go off the cliff. And I looked back along the road I'd come, and it was awful pretty, but I just couldn't, you know, I couldn't go back. I couldn't go back. So there I was. And I didn't really see how you jump off the cliff. I really didn't know. And, you know, this was some time ago, and I can't remember sitting there asking in meditation, how do I jump off the cliff? But I sort of took it in. You know how you do. You take it in and you kind of take it in down here in your meditation, and then it cooks a little more. And one day, not too long afterwards, I just realized this person that I was having trouble with, that the choice I was being faced with was really an internal one for me, and an important internal one for me. And I just realized I have to choose to trust this person. And I think what made it possible was an inkling that I didn't have to choose to trust the person because of any way that they were. It had nothing to do with them. I had to choose to trust him because of me and because of what it meant for me. And it didn't matter what the other person was like at all. Not even a bit. And that was a real eye opener. And so the koan being what it is, this I resisted this mightily, and that's why I was running back and forth on the edge of the cliff, and not quite relating it to this teaching that I was given. One day I just thought, well, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to choose to trust this person. And the next time I went to go meditate, I suddenly, without quite knowing it, found that I was down there. I didn't know that that's what was, I didn't know in my head that making that choice was the jumping off the cliff. But the next time I went to meditate, I'd gone down I was at the bottom of the cliff. Well then, the reason why that next picture came up is because it was telling me that I was sitting at the bottom of the cliff, kind of hiding in the rocks, kind of going, okay. And it was saying, well, you can't just, now that you've got down the cliff, you can't just sit there doing nothing, hiding in the rocks. You actually have to move. And, you think, well, moving forward on a more level surface would be easier than jumping off a cliff, but each little step in training looks a little different, and each little step requires a step. So I went, right, okay, I took a step and started to walk across this little area here. And then I started coming to these little pools of water. And the pools of water are kind of neat. They're pretty interesting. Because when you come to a pool of water, it turns out, you do what is sort of the natural thing to do, is you look in it. Well, in this case, the pools of water each contained some kind of a painful memory of some sort. And I really believe that the continuing unfolding of this kind of teaching in a series of images are almost like walking through a movie was really to help me through this time of looking into these pools of water with little painful things in them. But the really neat thing about that is it turns out that you go to a pool of water, you look in, and the painful thing washes over you, and then the Eternal says, well, stop and rest a while. Drink this water. And it's beautiful. And the water's completely clean at that point. And so it becomes very refreshing, spiritually refreshing and strengthening. And and it's just the thing. It's just the ticket. So then, as you can see, some of the pools are smaller and some are bigger. But when the timing is right, then one progresses to the next. The next step is to progress to the next little pool of water, and then the same thing. One looks within and allows the whatever it is to wash through, and then one refreshes oneself with the water. Rumi Master Koshin will remember, because he was my refuge monk at the time. This is actually a fairly difficult time in training for me, and but it was good. As I say, I got to drink the water, and that was great. But in addition to this kind of teaching, I just wanted to relate this wonderful thing that happened at that time. Is during the day, it was like just one foot in front of the other, and I just didn't know what was going to hit me next. But at night, I was having the most wonderful dreams. They were comfort dreams. Like one was, I was sitting by the side of a river, and on my left side was a deer, a young deer, kind of with the legs bent up, just sitting next to me. And on my right side was a fox. doing the same thing. We were all just sitting there watching the river. It was incredible. There's no words to describe the feeling of that dream, but you know, that was at night. Then there was the next day. But it was all good at the same time. There's one thing I meant to mention. You know, this figure up here is dressed like a monk. That's just because it's me and I was a monk. But don't read, oh, you have to be a monk to stand at the edge of the cliff, because as most of you probably know, you don't. We all hit the cliff at various points and various jumping distances at different times. So, and more than once in the course of training. So I did want to throw that out. It was interesting to me at the time that I actually, at one point, I was able to kind of look. There's like a little shelfy thing here, and then another little drop, and then there was a kind of a bigger lake I could see in the distance, and I kind of thought, oh boy, because the size of the lake seemed to have to do with the depth of the pain, but you know, there's more water there too, so. And this went on for some time, and this image would come up. It wasn't like with me all the time, but it would come up when it was needed and as a kind of ongoing teaching when I hit certain points. So it wasn't like I was going around all day, you know, thinking about this most of the time. But from time to time, it would come up again and show me kind of, well, this is what you're dealing with now, and here's the teaching for that. And then the whole thing kind of added up to this picture. So a few years after it first came up, I'd gone to Eugene at that point, and I remember one day I was just kind of going along doing daily life training, doing what I needed to do, but at one point I just seemed good to just kind of check in and ask, well, is there anything I really need to look at right now? Is there anything I'm sort of overlooking or missing, or just is there anything that it's good to see right now? And I was just meditating with that, and at that point it came up that just this image of a monk sitting in a cave, and it's sort of hard to tell, but this little blobby here, that's a cave. Monk sitting in a cave with a fire in front of them, and just sitting quietly, just at just the right pace, just feeding wood into the fire. And I thought, oh, well, that's different, that's interesting, that seems good. And so I thought, okay, well, it doesn't seem to be any immediate pressing thing other than just keep feeding the wood into the fire. But I wasn't completely sure I understood the teaching of it right. So the next time I was down at the Abbey, it was for the monks retreat, and we had the Jodo, or the, what do we call that now? Like the spiritual examination, where Grand Master would get up on the altar and we'd all go up and ask her a question. So I thought, well, that was a good opportunity. And I just described that and, you know, said, well, does that sound okay? And her answer was, you have to keep the child of the Lord warm, which I didn't totally understand. I mean, I knew she talked about the child of the Lord and lotus blossom, and I always thought it seemed a bit beyond me in a way, but the way I think of that now is we go through times of, you know, there's kind of cycles in training, and there are times that we're more actively dealing with our karmic past in one way or another. It can be present life, past life karma, whatever we're working on. We've done a certain amount of training, it's ripened some things, and then there's a more active time of dealing with these things. And then there's times when you just do the cooking. Rabbi Master Koshin's talked about the cooking a lot. And so as I see it now, the sitting in a cave feeding the fire was the cooking going on for the next phase of training, which, well, at that time was not yet being seen. Beyond what I could see at that time was this mist-filled canyon land, which was all the training that there is to do in the future that I could not yet see. Just kind of letting me know, you know, there's a lot more work to do, and you don't have to worry about that. It holds a great promise for the future of coming to know the eternal, which is here. And but that, you know, just to focus on what's here and now. And as I see it now, that cooking is the preparation for the next phase of the journey. And as I've learned since then, there, you know, you go through those phases more than once. You know, there's the looking at things and the washing through and the drinking of the water, and then there's the cooking, and then there's the washing through and the drinking of water, and then there's the cooking, and it's all very necessary and good. Another time, much later on, I actually don't remember when it was, but it was when Reverend Master G was still alive, and I had some other kind of image that had water in it. It wasn't pretty, but it had water in it. I thought, well, that's a good thing. And then it sort of dawned on me, because she'd talk about the Sea of the Lotuses, and I always thought, well, you know, blissful place, you know. And then it dawned on me one day, well, can all this water really be all that different? So I asked her, I said, well, you know, sometimes there's like a sea of horribleness, and sometimes there's like little pools. And I think I was sort of formulating the question as I was talking to her, because I hadn't really premeditated asking her. I just had this opportunity, and I said, well, what I really want to know is it the same sea? And she just lit up. She just gave me this big smile. She said, yes. It's just like San Francisco Bay full of pollution. And then you clean it up. And it's like all of our little muddy pools are not different from the Sea of the Lotuses. Once we let the pain wash through and drink the water. So it isn't so far away and distant as it seems. And each step we take can be the jumping off the cliff step. It can be the drinking of the pool step. It can be the keeping the fire going step. But they're all important steps. And the eternal is always right there, just lighting up the whole thing with promise. And I think that's the greatest thing to me about this image, is just that sense of however distant the eternal may seem, all you have to do is look up, and the whole rugged, seemingly barren landscape is filled with this mist of promise of what is to come as we train. And I've been wanting to do this for 30 years, so there it is. I got this tube of paint called Pearlescent Shimmer. Ooh! So this is pearlescent shimmer in here, golden pearlescent shimmer, and so is the sun here.
Just a question about it always seems like there's some great heroism calls for in terms of jumping off the cliff. And I just wonder if you could talk a little bit about how that was in your case.
Well, this is only just one particular cliff jumping moment in my life of training, but I'd say that it always involves, I don't know, should I put this back on? I turned it off, so should I turn it back on? Do you want that? it off. What the heck? Oh, it's still going. It's still going. I know this thing. Anyway, yes, that's a good question because I actually meant to talk about that. When we all come up to points along the way where the koan is arising in such a way that it looks like our next step is an impossible one, and it looks impossible because self cannot conceive of, from the point of view of self, how to negotiate a particular point. And, you know, the precepts really help with that because they kind of can guide your footsteps. But the head, you know, the head can't solve it, basically, because, you know, the head in the service of the eternal can do a lot, but the head on its own can make a lot of muddles. So I would say, generally speaking, you can pretty much bet on there being some kind of a perceptual thing there that one is really struggling with. The interesting thing, at least seems to me, is that perceptual points that one struggles with don't always immediately, we don't always immediately perceive that there is actually a perceptual issue, but you can betcha if you're feeling kind of edge of cliff-like that there is. And if one then really sits still with that, the eternal will point the way and show you what the particular answer to that perceptual problem is. And, you know, it's always a struggle, but when you choose it, it's, you know, you're in flight. And if you don't choose it, you just keep running along looking for another way out. And you can do that as long as you want. And but when you really do choose it, then you can fly. And the flying, you know, even if it's landing you, you know, even if it's flight straight down to another step that may or may not be easy, it's still wonderful. So.